Welcome back to the Otaku DX Show with Veef and Deef. This time we're talking about the anime we've been watching. So I would like to start by a big announcement. I had my Strike Witch's cherry popped recently.
Oh no.
So I watched the Strike
Witch's
I watched the Strike Witch's movie. Made an agreement with Ben, who actually is a Strike Witch's fan, somehow.
I was about to say, who pushed this on you? Was this Ben?
Well, it's funny how this all got started, is just people talking, like, shitting on Strike Witches for a while, and Ben watched it, and he was like, man, this is good. Also, Ben, or I should say, Promethium 5, our esteemed copy editor and film reviewer on the DX website.
Resident 3A reviewer.
Yeah, he loves his 3A figures, and also he is a really big Iron Man fan.
Yes.
He started watching Girls in Panzer, and he loves this show.
Mm-hmm.
He absolutely loves it. He wants to put a decal of the Anglerfish team's logo on his car.
Which I can't get too mad about that, because I do think those logos are pretty adorable.
Yeah. The Anglerfish one is pretty funny looking. Mm-hmm. Just a little goofy-faced Anglerfish. He had said to me, Andrew, this is a show created by crazy people.
Yeah, I can agree with that, 100%.
Yeah. And he asked me, it's like, where can I get a Figma of Mako from the show? I was like, there isn't one yet.
Oh, dear.
I feel like I'm responsible for making him into a bit of a more of an anime
a
fan
little
than,
bit responsible.
Than he normally is.
No, you are entirely responsible, I think.
Okay, but anyways, Strike Witch is the movie.
Can we just talk about Girls in Panzer instead? We'll get there.
I just want to talk a little bit about the Strike Witches movie. Okay, a little bit about it. I have to say, given the way people talk about Strike Witches, I think they make a mountain out of a molehill.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is basically, like, the whole movie is basically the Avengers with less pants.
Yeah.
It's a magical girl show. I mean, they are the superheroes in this world. And, you know, other than the fact that they don't wear pants, which I really don't understand that. Like, I would understand if they don't wear pants during, you know, the fight scenes, but they don't wear
ever.
Pants at all. Yeah. And it's like, that's just like, I can't imagine the person masturbating this entire movie because that guy has said, like, stamina of the gods, man. It's like, Jesus Christ. Anyway.
Well, I think you just destroyed me.
Destroyed all podcasts. No.
Just go.
Anyway, so it's actually a pretty good movie. probably Strike Witches fans get more out of it, but for my first foray into the witches, I got a good view of every character, including the new one. They all had pretty good character moments. There wasn't that much fan service, aside from no pants. Mm-hmm. The fight scenes were pretty good, although there was some distracting use of CGI for the girls themselves. Mm. I don't know why they're doing that now. It's basically the story of the main character. What's her name again? Yoshika?
I wouldn't remember. Anyway.
I know her last name is Mia Fuji. But basically she lost her powers at the end of the TV show. And she wants to be a doctor instead. And it's all about she's going to go off. She's going to be escorted to Europe to study with the finest doctors in the world. And the whole thing is her dealing with an attack by the Nuroi, who are these crazy flying alien things that take the form of different kinds of weapons, like a giant spider tanks, or the main bad guy in this movie, which is a giant flying space battleship thing. And, you know, all the gang gets back together, and they go and fight, stop bad guys. The weird thing that kind of struck me by surprise is the fact that the New Roi, they have hives. Like, this is a bug war? I was like, crap, this is a bug war. Damn. I was like, wow, this is more like Muv Luv than I would have thought originally. One of the funny things I found is that the character, this is Ben's favorite character, Charlotte E. Yeager. All of the characters are named after famous World War II aces. She's named after Chuck Yeager, who is still alive, and I think people have informed him of his pantsless counterpart.
I wonder how he feels about that.
I don't know, because he shot at, you know, people in World War II.
Yeah.
Although he wasn't in the Pacific Theater. He was in the European Theater. So she is actually voiced by the same actress who does Callan from Code Geass.
Oh.
So I was like, man, I like her voice. I wonder who that is. Oh, it's Callan. She's really good at doing tomboys and stuff like that. Also, I read that that voice actress, she was doing a promo for Code Geass where she had to wear the school uniform from the show. Mm. And she liked the uniform so much, she wanted to keep it. They let her keep it. I was like, oh, at least you get into it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but like the thing is, it's kind of like how Girls in Panzer is so much better than it has any right to be.
Mm-hmm.
Strike Witches is almost there because this could be so terrible. This could be like bottom of the barrel, crappy, exploitive, and just shit. But they put so much effort into this that I can almost forgive the no pants. Almost.
Honestly, I think it's one of those shows that it's actually not that bad. The thing is, it's just, if you just read a summary of what it is, it just sounds so terrible. And people just draw their opinion on this is automatically bad from that.
Or this is the, or anime is ruined forever.
Yeah. Mind you, there are shows that are like that where the description is terrible and it is terrible, but this isn't one of those.
Yeah. You review several of them for OCX. For ODX. Actually, one thing I do want to mention, though, is that the world of Strike Witches is not quite like our world. The countries are, like, shaped different and stuff. America is Liberion. Japan has some weird name, too. My favorite one, though, is the name for Canada. Oh, you want to know what it is?
All right, I'm ready. I'm ready.
Faraway Land.
I was not ready.
That is literally the name for Canada. Faraway Land. That faraway land with all the hockey and bears.
That's about right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I haven't seen any Canadian witches yet, but...
I just have to say, personally, like, I've only seen, like, the first couple episodes of Strike Witches. Yeah. The thing is like, I don't remember anything particularly good or bad about this show. This is just the show I always mix up with Sky Girls. And Sky Girls is always the thing I think is Busou Shinki.
Well, they did do those figures.
Yeah, which doesn't help my confusion.
Which were very similar to Busou Shinki's.
I don't know.
All right, so, go ahead.
Let's see, let me talk about, are you done with the Strike Witches?
Yeah.
All right.
I'm done with the witches.
Now, slowly but surely, we've been getting more gyros that are subbed. So, I'm going to talk about the last couple episodes pretty quick. Did I mention the curry rice thing to you before?
Yes. So did the kid get his Kong loader?
Yes, he did. And
did he scream out the name just like X-Kaiser?
Not quite.
Oh.
They don't really scream a lot of names except for the main character.
Oh, well.
But, no, Kong Loader is freaking awesome. Because whenever he runs like a gorilla because of those arms. His legs can't, you know.
Yeah.
It's pretty fantastic, and he punches stuff really good. But,
yeah.
That was not a lot happened in the past two episodes, really, aside from Kong Loader showing up. But they finally brought in the final fifth driver, who is this girl who practices archery, whose name I don't remember because names don't matter in Japanese shows to me anymore. And basically, they have her and she's on her way to the school. But the evil organization is like, okay, here's what we're going to do. You are one female lackey. You're going to dress up like this character and pretend you're her before she gets there. And you're going to steal the information for the Mobius engine. And so she's like, sure, I'll do that. And so she goes. And the original plan was to have the Blues Brothers, who are the two lackeys for the bad guys. They literally look like them. They were going to distract the girl and keep her from getting to the school. The thing is, she has no sense of direction. So she got lost in that she kind of just kind of wandered off to Chinatown and saw a panda book bag and bought that instead.
Oh.
And they're freaking out because they're thinking, is this girl, does she know where Fong is? Is she trying to throw us off her trail? And then they just realize she just has no idea where she's going. And then she says, oh, wait, I know what to do. And she goes in her bag and they think, finally, she's going to read a map and solve all of these problems. Except she was actually looking at, like, a horoscope reading that says her lucky cardinal direction is northwest. And so she started heading in that direction.
No, I don't often read horoscopes, but I don't remember them having lucky directions.
Lucky foods, directions, color underwears, they do everything.
Yeah.
But they eventually think she's finally on her way, and they decide to try and catch her and stop her from getting to the school. Except they accidentally grabbed a different person who was, in fact, a man that looks like her from behind, who is a Brazilian dude. And they accidentally get on the wrong boat and go to Brazil instead. You can tell this because the boat has a tiny Brazilian flag on it.
Ah, Brazil. Home of Street Fighter.
Yeah. Honestly, aside from that, nothing really happened this episode other than everyone's kind of an idiot in terms of how dim-witted they are to not notice things. We did get to see the new girl's robot, which is known as the Anubia. If you've seen any of the robots from this show, it's the one that looks a lot like a Kitsune.
Yeah, you showed me.
I really do like that design. I hope it gets... A lot of the people I also know watching the show think it's kind of weird looking and they're not too fond of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually really dig its proportions. It's what I found is like with a lot of robot shows where the more unorthodox a design is, the more I tend to find myself liking it. Mm-hmm. And this design does that enough that I do find it to be one of the more attractive designs they've done. Plus, its tail wags when she emotes and yells at things. Now, the most important thing was the very end of this episode, because she did manage to steal the data for the Mobius engine and put it on a flash drive, which says secret on it. And that was the professor, who looks like the professor from Back to the Future. He says, he's like, wait, no, don't take that, that's very important.
1.21 gigawatts.
And
so 1.21 gigawatts.
They take it back to the evil organization's base. And by the way, the main bad guy of this show is named Lord Goat. Goat-sama, as they call him. And so he's like,
you know what would be really bad?
What?
If this show had a DeLorean-based robot.
I hope it does.
I don't think there are many DeLoreans in Japan.
No, but anyway. So they decide, and he's like, ah, excellent, now we have this information on the Mobius drive, and we can make more gyrosetters. What ended up being on the flash drive was a video of cute cats.
Oh.
And so it's just them looking at the cats as the screen goes to black. This has happened twice to them now. The last time was when they tried to record footage of the gyrosetters in the race, and instead the camera just recorded the race queens instead.
Oh.
These guys have a really bad track record. I kind of feel bad for them.
Oh. All right, so I will talk about something that doesn't involve robots for once. Our mutual friend, SD Samshell, on his Twitter feed, he kind of tuned me into this ongoing manga and with an anime adaptation called それでも街は待っている, or which translates to "and yet the town moves." Mm-hmm. This is often shortened to just "sorry, machi." Mm-hmm. And it's just a frame from the manga of the main character Hattori. Just having she has her hands out as if she's reading a paper, but she doesn't have one. And the text says, "reading the invisible paper in her mind." And I had to know what this was. And I read the description, and he told me about it. And he said, despite the fact that this is about a maid cafe, it's not really a maid show. Mm-hmm. Because the actual setup is that the main character, Hattori, she works for this crusty old lady who looks like a man, and is voiced by a man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's scary.
Yeah, she's kind of scary looking. One funny thing, though, is that the Figma for Hattori comes with parts to make it into the old lady.
That confused me so much when I didn't know what it was.
Yeah, yeah. And the basic setup is that this, the Seaside Cafe, is actually just like a little hole-in-the-wall sushi bar. Not really that special. You know, they serve coffee and stuff there. But the owner thought that it'd be a great idea to dress up as maids to get people to come to the place. It's pretty half-assed. Because all it means is that Hattori and her wear maid outfits. It's sort of a weird, surrealist comedy. Little slice of life, but Hattori is very energetic and also kind of whiny. I thought one of the funnier things that they did in the first episode was she's in the cafe, one of her classmates is there studying for a math test. And Hattori is terrible at math, and she wanted to copy his homework. So she sits down right next to him. And he actually has a crush on her, so he's a little embarrassed by it. But he's like, "wait, sit across from me." And she's like, "I can't do that, because what if I mistake a 9 for a 6? Or what if I mistake the letter E for the katakana for yo? Oh my god. What if the entire Western alphabet was made based on this kind of weird misconception? This could be the discovery of the century." And then her classmate says, it's like, "no, they don't have katakana in outside of Japanese." She's like, "oh, okay." So the show does kind of do like little vignettes that are taken from the manga. Mm-hmm. But it's just the fact that it's like so weird and just very, very well written, I have to say. Mm-hmm. I want to actually recommend the third episode especially. That's where I'm up to. Because they actually have a little bit where Hattori gets to show up her homeroom teacher, who's also her math teacher. She actually has a crush on him too, but, you know, he's very stiff, very straight-laced, and, you know, doesn't really notice that.
Yeah.
That this teenage girl is, like, trying to seduce him and failing at it. Also, I like the fact that Hattori's best friend is actually really into, like, maids. And she actually is working there at the cafe now and was trying to get them to kind of maid up the whole, their whole pitch. Like, you know, saying, "oh, welcome, master." Or doing other kind of maid-like things. But Hattori is terrible at it, so she messes up a lot. But anyway, so this is a mystery. It's a little bit of a mystery. So her teacher brought her these two paintings. These were self-portraits painted by the teacher's grandfather, who passed away recently. So they divided up all of his stuff amongst his family, and the teacher got these two paintings. Now, here's the mystery. These are done on square canvas instead of the usual rectangular canvas. They are supposed to be self-portraits. They have the same title on the back, which just says eyes. Now, one painting is normal, just a picture of an old gentleman wearing a hat. The second painting is identical, but it has four eyes instead of two. Now, all that it Hotori knows is that these facts, and also the fact that the teacher's grandfather was a bit of a gambler, and he struggled to paint as well as, you know, gamble a lot. And so because she actually really likes detective novels and also TV dramas, like detective dramas,
yeah, yeah,
he brought it to her to figure it out. And she did. And she felt so proud of herself for showing up her teacher. So given all these facts, I want people out there to figure out what's the deal with these paintings. Because it's actually really clever, and I don't want to give it away.
I have to watch this episode.
There was also a really funny bit where she was told to take the little motor scooter they have. It's like one of those like razor scooters, but with a motor on it. She had to go off to the store, but she can't remember what to get at the store. Yeah, and also this local cop stopped her, and I liked it because. And one thing I liked about this cop is that he was actually voiced by Shigeru Chiba.
Oh.
Mr. Screaming, Annoying Guy.
Yes.
Robot fans may know him as Vanilla from Votoms. And also Shige from Pat Labor. But very distinctive voice. He busted her for not having a license to drive this or a license plate on it on the little scooter. And he said that you driving this is like a hamburger that only has the bread. So when she was like, hey, that's okay, it's still bread. But yeah, they get this great argument about it. It's just really funny. And also for whatever reason, like in between bits, they have this like 5-second scene of the weird raccoon dog that just shows up in the opening for like a split second. Delivering some kind of Japanese idiom that in the subtitles they do kind of localize it a bit. But yeah, it's all right. So yeah, it's really cool. I mean, don't get turned off by the maidness. There really isn't a whole lot of maidness. It's just kind of part of the setting. But yeah, liking the show a lot. Hope to check out some more of it.
I got another one to mention that's actually pretty quick. Because I watched all of these today. So I was a pretty big fan of the series Axel World from last season. I like the designs more than anything else. But I was really confused because Axel World had an OVA that came with like a PSP game. And then later today I learned there's also these Axel World specials that came with the DVDs. These are freaking weird.
Like, I saw a picture from one that you had on Twitter.
I just posted another one. Basically, they're like 3 minutes long, and the main character, his online avatar is a pig, and so he's a pig character, and, you know, the girl is dressed up like the butterfly. Because her avatar is based on a butterfly, the other character carries around in a like a cocoon basket thing.
And all right.
It's just so freaking random. By the way, he actually doesn't have hair, but in that picture he does. Like, the first one is about someone steals the lowly character's cookies, and they see these, like, pig nose shaped footprints, and they think, it must be her. It must have been Haruyuki, the pig guy. And so he says, wait a minute, I can't walk on my nose. And then they get the idea. It's like, wait a minute, he evolves such that he can tippy toe on his nose, which is where that picture comes, because that's the girl's thought of what he must do. And she's like, when did you evolve to such a degree? And so they go around wandering around trying to figure out who it is, and they eventually find out there's this character named Ash Roller in the show who is a skull-headed biker dude who has a motorcycle. And he has this habit of like tossing in random English to the way he talks. Like, there's a point where he says, "This is all your fault," and he basically says, "Like, I don't know you."
Oh yeah,
he's hilarious. But he's like, "Hey, check out this awesome new motorcycle I have," and the motorcycle has like the pig face for tank treads, or for tire treads, and they figure out it's him, and then they beat the crap out of him. That's it. These are really bizarre.
Well, Japanese humor is typically very bizarre.
The second one had a lot of puns, and I wanted to strangle someone.
They love puns over there. I'm sorry.
They do.
They love pun. Japan heart pun.
Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, speaking of pun, there's also a pun in the third one about ponsus and pan. Where it's like, I want some bread. Here, have some ponsu.
He means panties.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, so it's time for Elgheim.
Oh, jeez.
Actually, no, because now we're at the second opening.
Say Mark 2?
Say Mark 2, yeah.
I actually like the second ending a lot more, or second opening.
Yeah, the second opening. It only has one ending. Sorry. Mm-hmm. They always have Starlight Showers, the ending. So this is the part in the Giant Robot Show where we get the second robot. This is kind of a Sunrise thing. I feel like they did it more often than others did. So the way they've set this up, so all of our friends are on this planet. Gobble is still chasing them. And Daba has come down with some kind of disease. He is sick. He has a fever. He feels really weak. Doesn't really happen in Giant Robot Shows too often. And they try to take him to a doctor. The thing that's kind of funny about this, and I think you did see this on Twitter, is there's this running joke for the episode where this doctor is gay.
Uh-huh.
And that makes And that makes everyone a little uneasy. But not like super freaked out, but just like, because one of the things he says when he sees Kyo bringing Daba to the doctor's office, he says, "Hey, you got pretty smooth skin." And then he looks at Daba and he's like, "He's pretty cute too." And everyone has this look on their face. And later on, when he shows up, he's like, "I hate women."
Okay.
And then Gavle is just like, "Wait, does that mean you're..." And just kind of trails off. And then they change the subject.
I see.
Yeah, so Yoshiyuki Tomino has a very strange sense of humor.
Yoshiyuki Tomino is strange.
He is very strange, yeah. This could have been actually a joke from Nagano, because Five Star Stories does have a lot of jokes.
That's a possibility.
a lot of yaoi jokes.
It's their combined powers, I think. That's what it really is.
With their powers combined, they created the quintessential 80s mecha show.
Yeah, yeah.
But the thing with this episode is that this doctor was actually involved in a plan to kidnap Daba. They try to capture, basically he's going to hold them there inside the doctor's office, so that Gable can come in with the new robot, which is called the, and I'm going to say it how it's written, Amandul Stack. There are quotation marks around the stack part, so I'm going to keep saying stack when I bring it up.
Oh, great.
So the stack is actually the robot that they rebuild into the Elgheim Mark II.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically like a red version, a little stripped down. Doesn't have the giant-ass knee guards that the Elgheim Mark II does.
Yeah, yeah.
It has a different shield and has an all-black head. It's actually very, very red. It's like mostly red. They actually are going to make a Robot Damashi figure of it.
Have we seen that one yet or no?
They teased it.
Okay, that's what it was.
At a show, yeah. Gable was trying to use the stack to kidnap Daba and Kyo. Daba manages to get away, or someone takes him away. Kyo does get kidnapped and taken back to the base. What ends up happening is... Actually, one thing that's really funny is Gable complains that the stack cannot walk properly.
Mm-hmm.
So the designer actually points out to him the legs extend and shows them unfurling. Because for whatever reason, they decided they needed to have a transforming heavy metal in Elgheim.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, when Kawamori sort of left, or he ended Macross with Do You Remember Love back in the 80s, he left this like huge transforming robot power vacuum that nobody could really fill.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of the transforming robots that aren't Macross from the 80s are kind of awful looking.
They're pretty forgettable for the most part.
Yeah, or when they do it in a big show like Elgaim or Gundam or Zeta Gundam. When the robot has to transform, it's just, it turns into nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And all the Elgaim Mark II and, of course, the Stack do when they transform is they basically just lay down and put their gun on their arm so that it points up. Because they basically fly forward with their fronts facing down.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of works if you look at it from above. Because it looks like the spaceships from Elgaim. Mm-hmm. But they show it from below a lot. And it just looks like the robot. You know, posing like a big A.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty silly.
See, most of those I can forgive. Because, you know, it's the 80s and whatnot. It's forgettable.
The robot mode is really cool on the Mark II. And the Stack is the Stack.
Yeah, yeah.
As well.
Yeah, it's just the transformations. It's just, what infuriates me is the fact that since then, a lot of mechanical designs have changed, and, you know, things transform more elaborately and more convincingly, except for Gundam, who can't fucking figure out how to do it for the life of them. Okay, we're gonna put the arms down and kinda sorta bend the legs. Then we're gonna put a shield on top of it. Alright, we're good. I'll give them credit, the H2 actually did transform differently. But still.
Well, the high water mark for transforming Gundams is still the Zeta.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is kind of a shame.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I like the Zeta. I like its goofy Wave Rider mode.
Mm-hmm.
But it holds no candle to a Valkyrie.
Absolutely not.
Or even most Transformers.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, so the way this ends is that Daba, who is sick, launches in the Elgaim to rescue Amu, who went to get Kyo. She pretended to be in the custody of the doctor guy, which is why he said, "I hate women." Because, to be fair, Amu is a woman that a lot of people would hate because she's so shrill and annoying. Daba is just like dying out there. He's trying really hard. Lilith is inside the cockpit trying to help him out to point out enemies and stuff like that. What ends up happening is that the Elgaim has fallen over. Gable's second-in-command, Irene, goes up to try to get him out of there, to get Daba out of the Elgaim. Daba, who's sick, he manages to pull a gun on her and take her hostage. And she doesn't let Gable know of this, but Daba manages to say that, look, I care more for my friends, and like Amu and Kyo, more than Gable cares for you. And that made her stop and think.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that allowed them to all get away and to not only steal the Stack, but also convince the designer to come with them and rebuild it for them into the Elgaim Mark II.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really funny because in the next episode, they have already rebuilt it into the Elgaim Mark II.
That was fast.
Yeah. I was like, oh, that's why they didn't make that too many model kits of the Stack, because it's only in one episode.
Poor thing.
I like it. Actually, I kind of tried way too hard to unlock it in the first Ace game,
because
in the first Another Centuries episode game, you have to get special points from doing a certain thing in each level to unlock the other robots. In Ace 2, they just actually start you off with the Stack, and you upgrade it into the Elgaim Mark II, which makes more sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because in both games, it's just a crappier Elgaim Mark II. So, yeah. The second episode was kind of interesting, but it left a little bad taste in my mouth because for no reason, this random guy who is one of the crew members on Daba's ship says to Lesse, I don't think women should be fighting. I think that it'd be better if you were nicer and if you were... Or so, just like a bunch of like random sexist shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then she gets pissed off by this. Rightfully so.
Yeah, I wonder why.
But, But like the guy isn't like being mean about it. He's just being like very like doting and fatherly about it. For whatever reasons, like he's the same age though. Yeah, it's just one of those weird things. And then she goes out. They're in the middle of a sandstorm, still being chased by Gavlay. That's kind of the theme of this whole show so far. She meets Gavlay in the sandstorm. They fight for a little bit. She takes him prisoner. She bandages up his leg. He tries to attack her a few times, but she points a lightsaber at him. But he does kind of get under her skin a little bit because he says that, saying something to the effect of, it's the fact that you're a woman is holding you back from killing me. Mm-hmm. And that'll be your downfall. And she does let him go. And she goes back to the ship where she tries to go cook for a little bit.
Oh, dear.
Which prompts Amo and Kyo to just laugh hysterically as she fails at cooking. Mm-hmm. But it's like, you guys are just being shitbags to her for no reason. What ends up happening is the guy who made Lesse mad goes out in one of the land boosters. They're these like jet fighter things that the heavy metals hang underneath to fly around with. And he's going to go out there and stop the bad guys as an apology to Lesse. But Dabba decides to go out after him to bring him back. I don't know why. We never met this guy before. I don't know why he cares so much, but he goes out in the Elgai Mark II. It needs some tuning, unfortunately. Like, the screen is a little fuzzy on the inside. It has actually a full 360 display, you know, like the Zeta Gundam does.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of where some of that came from.
Interesting.
He's kind of complaining about all the balances off. It doesn't work right. They're calling for Lesse to go out and save him. And she's a little pissed off still. But Amu actually breaks down and cries and says, look, I love Dabba as much as you do, but you can do something that I can't. I'm only... No, this is supposed to be like really emotional.
Really? Because this seems hilarious right now.
Yeah, well, the show, it's very...
Anyway.
Anyway. So, something that she can't do because she is just... She used to be a bandit and an actress. She's not a soldier. She goes out and she saves Dabba. Gavlay actually confronts her. They're both in their giant robots. And he asks her to get out so they can have a duel with their light swords, lightsabers, laser swords.
Yeah.
And they do get into a fight. And it looks like Gavlay's about to win, but he decides to back off to repay her for fixing him up and not killing him earlier. Before he goes, he does say to her, as soon as you overcome being a woman, then we can fight again. Which, I mean, the thing is that not only was Elgai made in a different era, it's made in a different country with different values.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's one of those things, like, Westerners looking at Japan, we think, like, oh, there are so many, like, great female characters. But it's one of those things that feels kind of weird because it reminds me of what's been going down in the Gundam novels, which I need to finish the second one still. I have to, like, two chapters left. That Tomino feels that men and women have these innate qualities that make them different. Mm-hmm. And it's like the female characters, no matter how strong they are, you know, no matter how great they might be, like Emma Sheen. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people like Emma.
Emma's pretty badass.
Yeah, but it's like they still have the limitation of feminine feelings or something like that.
I think the good example of this would be, I think, is it Rekawa from Zeta?
Yes. Yeah, that's basically what's going on in Elgai. How Rekawa betrayed everyone just because...
She's a woman in need. She has needs, damn it. Or something else.
They're probably fixing that up in the Zeta Gundam manga.
Probably.
To make it a little more clear. Because that was really
weird.
Poorly handled in Zeta Gundam. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's kind of where we are right now and where we're at right now in Elgai. I have to say, watching this show, makes me not really want to watch another 80s mecha series, at least a long one, for a while.
That's understandable.
Not saying I'm never going to watch one again, but taking stock of the ones I've seen, it's just people hype this crap up so much, and it's like they're not really that amazing unless you just love seeing robots fight. You know, it's just like, yeah, I mean, it's also a problem with any kind of 50-episode TV show, 50-some-odd, because they really stretch it out.
There's a point where it just starts dragging a little bit.
Yeah.
It's like, there are very few 50-episode shows that don't do that.
Yeah. Macross 7 does kind of drag, but I think the payoff makes it work. That
I'm at the point where I'm like, I've been stuck at like episode 38 or 39. For about a year now. And what happens is I try to go back and I go through the episodes and I just skip through them real quick. I can't tell. Like, I literally am unable to tell which episode it was because they're so similar to me.
Yeah, that's kind of true about Macross 7 sometimes. It's kind of... Mm-hmm. Problem is the stock footage.
that doesn't help. No. I thought, like, it was cool seeing, you know, VF-11 C's getting, you know, captured and whatnot, and then it kept happening.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest difference between Macross 7 and any other long robot show is just more stock footage than is necessary. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's Elgheim. I want you to talk about Girls in Panzer.
Like, you want me to talk, or, like, we talk, or...
You can talk about Girls in Panzer.
All right. Well, did you watch the most recent episode?
Was this the one that ended with the Italian team?
No.
Oh, I'm behind.
Another one just came out today.
Oh. Oh, dear.
All right, well, we can talk about that one later on. But...
We'll talk about it some other time. Mm-hmm. Okay.
The episode and subject is... It's actually a relative... It was an interesting episode in that, for the most part, not a lot actually happened in this episode. A lot of it was just dedicated to, I hate this phrase, but world building.
Oh, we're going to talk about world building later.
Oh, jeez. Oh, dear.
With Buso Shinki.
Yeah, I figured that's what you're talking about. But, this is, considering the huge battle that they just got done with, it was pretty understandable that they had to, you know, kind of, you know, take a break because animation budget and whatnot. But we had this super weird melodrama that happened at the end of the Sanders arc where it's Mako, right?
Yeah, Mako.
Mako's grandmother has an accent, so they go to the mainland. And we figure out that her grandmother is the most angry, yelling little Asian woman ever.
That's common with Asian grandmothers.
Yeah. It was pretty interesting. But it turns out she's pretty alright, and for the most part, that's all that really happens at that part.
Yeah,
They built it up to so much with all that dramatic music playing.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, it's over now.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. I did like the little character moments, like when everybody was swarming around Miho.
Yeah.
Trying to ask her questions, and then all of her teammates decided to help out there. One of the freshmen, the ones who pilot the M3, they started talking about, it's like, senpai, if I talk about panzers around boys, they don't like me. Senpai, my boyfriend left me because I drive tanks.
Yeah. This is a very unusual parallel universe.
I think it's a matriarchy. It must be a matriarchy. Because...
If it isn't, I'll be very surprised.
Yeah, it must be a matriarchy because the women drive tanks and the men, you know, pull rickshaws. Yeah, so...
You know, we had mentioned previously about how through some text and whatnot, they said that, you know, why it is that the women are the ones who use the tanks and operate the machinery. Yeah. And this episode helped confirm a good bit of that as well.
Yeah. Also the fact that I like the bit where they're kind of wandering around looking for more tanks because they found that the club had more tanks. Mm-hmm. They weren't destroyed because they would have noted that in the records.
Yeah.
And apparently these ships are so old and so big, you could lose an entire tank.
Yeah, again, you have to keep in mind, there is an entire town.
Yes, that's true.
On this tank. This tank is monstrous.
No, the ship, not a tank.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
If they had giant land ships, that would be pretty cool, too.
Yes.
Yeah. So this show is technically science fiction. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of weird. They found the remains of one tank in an old disused town, mm-hmm. which is kind of weird. And the other tank, they kind of teased it. I think it's a tiger tank. Mm. But it was down below in a place no one had been in a long time, below decks.
The ship is so large that the girls can actually get lost in there if they're not keeping track of where they are.
Yeah. I did like when one of the masts like, why are we on a ship anyway?
Yeah, yeah.
And they explain that somebody thought that education on the mainlands was inadequate. Mm-hmm. So they wanted to create an environment away from that where better students could be taught mm-hmm. to make better people, basically. Yeah. So it's kind of weird, but
it's a very fascinating world.
Yeah. Getting back to actually the little scene in the hangar, I liked how Salary was the one answering all the romance questions.
Yes, yes. It's like, I would not trust her at all.
One of the freshmen said, it's like, wait, how many boys have you dated? Mm-hmm. And she just kind of turns around, all dejected. Mm-hmm. And I love how one of the girls says, oh, don't worry. The tank can be your boyfriend.
Yeah, yeah. I also love that when they all split up to search for the tanks, the history club goes with Yukari. And the way they decide which direction to start looking in...
is dowsing.
Yes, they... Yeah. Which was pretty hilarious to me.
Well, they know their history. They're just, smart. They have no common sense.
Yeah. It's like, they're literally history otaku. That is all they know about.
I did like how Yukari seemed to fit in with them very well. Because she knows tanks. Mm-hmm. And nothing but.
Indeed.
I was a little miffed that at the end, the battle was just like 5 seconds.
Yeah. Well, no, it wasn't a battle for 5 seconds at all, because all we saw was we didn't even see the battle, it was just the aftermath.
Yeah, the girl, the leader of the Italian team. You want to know what her name is?
What?
Anchovy.
Seriously?
Yes, that's her name.
Wow.
That's what's written on the character sheet, Anchovy.
Why are these names so bad? Between that and Darjeeling, I'm just like, jeez.
Yeah. Yeah. I did like how she's just this angry girl with...
drill hair.
Gray drill hair.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, if you notice in the background, one of the other girls in the Italian team, she has a one-man tank.
Really?
A little tankette.
Oh, I have to go look at this now.
Why would you even field that? If their whole battle is about shooting other tanks.
Maybe that it's like a distraction.
I don't even know. I don't think those things
Wow, that thing is puny.
Yeah, it's a real thing, though.
I thought that was a part of the other tank.
No, it's a tiny... Yeah, it's a little tankette. I remember that thing from reading about tanks as a kid.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
Anyway... pretty good episode. I guess I have to catch up on the next one.
The next one is pretty freaking good. Like, I was prepared to talk about the bulk of that. We may have to talk about that later on, because it's a good episode, and it does that thing where that show ends on a cliffhanger again.
We can do it, like, next time.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not going to talk about Mavo, because we're coming off in an hour. Mm-hmm. But I do want to talk about that I did read the... first chapter of the Muv Love spinoff, somebody translated, the Schwarzes Machen light novel series. which is still being serialized in a hobby magazine. So this takes place in the 1980s, because the beta landed in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And it's about the elite 666th unit.
yeah, of course.
Called the Schwarzmachen, or Black Mark, in the East German Army. Because Mavlov still has the Soviet Union. I gotta say, the translation was top-notch. A lot of little notes there that you actually needed to understand things. Mm-hmm. And also clarifying that certain things that they talk about that are real, they are not like the Stasi. They are not, in fact, the super Gestapo that that the Mavlov story makes them out to be. It reminded me a lot of the first chapter of Armor by John Stakely, where our main characters, the main character is actually a guy. I can't remember his name right now. Some redheaded kid. They are out off to go kill some of the laser class. That's basically their job. Where they have to very quickly fly low, wade through an endless stream of beta, find the laser class and kill them, and then get the fuck out of there really fast.
That's a great job.
Yeah, but they're really good at it, which is why they're this elite unit. At one point, one of the young girls in the squad flips the fuck out because of PTSD.
What?
She has post-traumatic stress disorder over the beta.
Oh, jeez.
And she starts killing them without staying in formation. So one of them had to go and save to bring her back into formation. She starts screaming about how the drugs do nothing. She can still see the beta in her dreams. And she wants to kill them. This shit is hardcore.
Is this some Gundam Seed bullshit going on here?
No, this is like legitimate. She is disturbed by this.
Oh, wow.
Like, this is realistic.
That's pretty terrifying.
Yeah, it's a real, like, I had to read, like, all 65 pages when I started. I was like, I need to read this whole thing. It is so intense. I can't stop.
Yeah, it's pretty freaking cool, though.
The only, yeah, this is kind of, like, why the fans of the visual novel are a little disappointed with the anime, Total Eclipse anime, because Total Eclipse isn't quite as extreme as the main story and also the Schwarzmachen spinoff.
So is the main story actually closer to, say, the first couple episodes of Marvel of Total Eclipse?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the thing you have to remember, there's three games
make the story,
but Alternative is definitely more like the first episodes, because this is all based on Alternative.
Yeah.
That part of it. The only thing that took me out of it was the fact that the artwork is done by a female artist named Carnelian. That's what she calls herself.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah.
Yeah. She does a lot of girl games.
Eroge art. Yeah, I'm pretty familiar with her work.
Yeah, she actually, she jumped on the chance to do this, I read. Like, one of the guys said on Twitter, it's like, who wants to do this? And she's like, I do. So
that really explains why there are random pictures that she drew of Mavlov, and I was just so confused.
Yeah, these are all Schwarzmachen characters.
I guess she must be kind of a mecha otaku, or at least a fan of giant robots, because she's also pretty fond of Macross Frontier as well.
She's a very good example of how even women can't draw breasts sometimes. And I really have to wonder about this. It's like, why do you draw huge balloon tits? Hey, just look down. You have the perfect...
it doesn't help with those suits. It's like, it's skin tight. How do these react to... I just make them balloon.
Well, in the latest episode of Mavlov, Total Eclipse, they did have some very Gynex-y moments there.
Oh, boy.
They spent a lot because Yui and Kriska were in their fortified suits. Even when they weren't wearing their suits, there was some the goods moving. But yeah, that just took me out of it, because it's like, there's this whole paragraph about how the girl who went back to save the crazy girl, she gets fucked.
Oh dear.
They manage to save her. They bring the robot, her MiG-21 back. They open the cockpit, and her entire body has been mangled. Her skull was caved in, but she was still alive.
Probably. Did Carnoian at least draw a picture of that?
She did not draw a picture of that.
No. God!
No.
Can't do anything right.
No, you find that stuff in the visual novels.
Yeah, yeah.
The chomp scene.
Mm-hmm.
But after this big description about how the blonde chick, who's the commanding officer, who has the aforementioned giant tits, she's going to shoot this poor girl, put her out of her misery. And it's like, oh god, this is terrible. And then, oh, balloon tits. It's like, oh. I feel like this is not helping the whole thing here.
Probably not.
That's the only problem with Muv Love, is just that it can't get away from its
roots.
Its roots, yeah. Even though they try. They really try, but they just...
They can't pull a Type Moon, apparently.
No, they can't.
Oh.
Check it out. I'll give you a link for that so people can read it.
Yeah, I really want to read this now.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I hope that more of this comes out, because it's a nice alternative to Total Eclipse. Actually, I was inquiring if there was a alternative manga that I could read instead of playing the game. Because the game is 65 hours long.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's an anime without being an anime.
Yeah, yeah.
More or less. And it's like, why do they make these games? Because they can do everything that an anime has without an anime. Mm-hmm. They got voice actors. They got merchandise. They've got spin-offs. But, you know, they don't need an anime.
Nah.
Nah.
It's
so
superfluous in this day and age, actually, oddly enough.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, I think we can close this off with some Booster Shinki. You could talk about the Shinki for a little bit.
All right. So it starts off innocently enough. You know, it feels like it's going to be another one of those really crappy episodes. Because it starts off with all the Shinkis going, oh, we're going to have a haiku contest to see who can
no,
make
that,
the best
No, we're doing the one before that.
The one before that. Which one's the one before that?
Where they start off and...
Okay, yeah. You know how I was just saying it starts off like a religion like episode that isn't good? This one actually is that one.
No, but I want to talk about the other episode that starts off where
Yeah. I know. I'm saying that.
Oh, okay.
It starts off with Aina is playing the what is this game actually called? I never
No, that's Lene. She's in there.
Lene. That's, I mess up these names so much. She's wearing the little bald cap thing. And they're playing the game, and Inez is just kind of sneaking around.
Well, the game they're playing is the one where you have to put the knives inside the barrel.
Yeah.
To make the thing
the
pop out.
The little thing pop out. In this case, that's actually Lene.
Yeah.
For some reason.
I love the her voice when she's inside there.
Yeah. She is still my favorite, I think.
It's just the Megumi Nakajima, she's just...
Yeah. Wait, that's... I didn't realize that.
Yeah, that's her. I told you the last time.
I don't listen, but that makes so much sense.
Yeah, Lene, the blue and white one.
Yeah, yeah. She does a really good job of sounding pretty different, actually.
I know, I've said that like the past 3 episodes.
Yeah. Anyway.
So Inez is sneaking around with some medicine.
This really shady-looking purple bottle.
And then she says she needs it to go on a date with Master. She makes this great face. I love the face here. And it gets knocked into the air and falls on Arn.
At least we're left to assume that, I think.
Yeah.
And after that, you know, the opening runs, and all of a sudden... Why can I not remember anyone's name right now?
Arn.
What's the... Arn wakes up in a schoolgirl outfit on the middle of the road, full-sized.
And she wonders why she doesn't have segmented limbs.
Yes.
Or screw holes. And the really the best part is when Kirara is just walking around with her little patrol sticks clacking together.
Yeah, yeah.
Arn goes up to her and she's like, "Hey, what happened to me?" But Kirara doesn't recognize her for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, "Well, girls often go through puberty."
Yeah.
"And they may change overnight." And Arn doesn't understand.
And she tries to explain this all to her. And the only logical explanation Kirara can come to is that, oh, they made a life-size Shinki.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Which is funny, because that's what happens in the OVA. The Moon Angel OVA.
I don't think I need to see that.
It's only 40 minutes long. It's more like Metabots than this is.
Oh, then I might need to watch it.
Yeah. And so Arn actually meets up with Masta, and they do kind of go on a date. Yeah, but it turns out that while she's having this date with Masta, in the real world, this is all a dream, Arn is actually still sleeping. And she has been infected with a virus that is destroying her AI and causing her to have this dream. So they're all freaking out.
Yeah.
That Arn is going to die. Which is also weird because I guess Shinkis can dream.
Yeah, there are some interesting implications behind this. Yeah.
Do they dream of electric sheep?
No, I didn't read the book.
I didn't either. I just watched Blade Runner.
But what I was confused by here was the virus caused by the vial that Inez had, or
no,
was
it was
this unrelated to
this
that?
This was like a computer virus.
Okay.
Like she got it while browsing the internet. Mm-hmm. Because they can do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But it's like,
so it didn't actually have anything to do with the grow big thing.
No.
Yeah. Okay.
No.
I was terribly confused by
that. Yeah, but it's like, it's surprisingly like earnest and kind of sad towards the end when you think she's going to actually die, and how she's thanking Master for this wonderful time that she got to have as a real girl.
Yeah.
And she got to eat ice cream and go try on a dress.
It also explains kind of, or like we get to see her get that little animal backpack she was using earlier in the show as well.
Yeah, that's true. So yeah, it's like this show keeps trying very, very hard and somehow it's succeeding. Mm. Oh, I did like the part where Pochi and Tamami are just hanging around.
Yeah.
And Arnville is trying to get into Master's apartment. And they chase her away.
Yeah.
Like tiny-ass robots chase her away.
It's like, they got guns, man.
I know, but they don't hurt. Apparently.
She disagrees.
I know. They actually, Tamami sends out her little drones, and they lined up like a JSDF team shooting Godzilla. That was a cool moment.
Except, unlike Godzilla, it actually worked.
Yeah. So the next episode...
Yeah, this is just the episode I kind of wanted to blitz through, because this next one is way better.
It's pretty great. Yeah. Because it starts off where, they're trying to compose haikus. Having a little haiku contest. And Masta has forgotten his lunch. It's like, oh, you are useless, and I hate you. So they go to they're going to take a detour through the park. They take a little rest for a little bit, and the lunch comes undone, the little bento bag or whatever, and the rice ball falls through a hole, and Lainey goes to chase after the rice ball. Don't worry, it's actually in a little plastic bag, so it's not getting...
It's like one of those convenience store ones.
Yeah, it's not getting dirty or anything. And suddenly she stumbled into Xenogears.
Yeah.
That's all I could think of. It's like, it's a shanty town inhabited by Shinkies. And you were very excited because they had the dark-skinned scorpion girl.
Graphius. I finally learned her freaking name.
She had a little...
Still haven't learned Spoon Girl's name, but I'm working on it.
She had a little cameo. They even had a close-up of her grinning, holding
She looked rather questionable.
Yeah. She had a baseball bat with nails and screws driven through it. And we learn this is the weapon of choice in this little Shinki village. This place was founded by some Shinki who, for whatever reason, were forced to be separated from their masters. And when this happens, the manufacturer tries to reclaim them, and they wipe their memory. To avoid this, they hid in this rather large town by Shinki standards.
Yeah.
Under the park. And unfortunately, some militant Shinki who were part of a liberation front came in and took over. But the best part of it is that because Shinki are mass-produced, you can have the same one be a different character, which is great for them because they can just reuse the CG models and the voice actresses. The voice actresses, too. Because the emperor of the Shinki town who took over, because now we hooked to no Kens, is the same kind as Kurata.
Yes.
She's actually in I believe it's an Akrante type Shinki. So that's why she's Kurara.
Okay.
Yeah, that's where her name comes from. So she's dressed up with like the full lion-headed shoulder pauldrons. And
that is the smallest freaking lion.
No, they were like little like toy, bits of a toy.
Okay.
Yeah. She has like, you know, the fur trim. She has a cape. And she is the queen of this Shinki town. She has her enforcers who are Zeleno grads who, instead of having their normal headgear, they have one with like an eye on it. They all have the spiked baseball bats as their weapons. And what happened is that Arn and Inez went looking for Lene, and they get kidnapped. Lene falls in with the resistance, fighting against the oppressive Shinki. We actually learned they actually have a religion as well.
Yeah. And the prophecy regarding how they will soon be saved by their savior.
Yes, the savior will come, accompanied by golden snow.
Yes.
Yes. And it turns out the savior was Lene. I don't want to reveal at the end, but this is world building.
Mm-hmm.
This show is doing world building.
Because you kind of skipped over, but the fact that, you know, Shinkis do run on batteries.
Yeah.
And so what they do is they make some of the other Shinkis in the town serve as slaves.
Yeah.
Who manually power the battery such that everyone else can be charged.
Yes, through a hamster wheel. Mm-hmm. And also one of those, like, hand-powered grinding things.
Yeah.
And the poor slaves in this were Poche and Tamami.
Yeah. They actually made me kind of feel bad for them. I'm amazed.
Well, because they actually teased a picture of their master.
Mm-hmm.
Who was a girl.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard that girls tend to like the animal-themed Shinki. So, in Japan, at least.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of heartbreaking and also cute. It's so weird how, like, this show and Girls in Panzer, you know, how all that, like, sci-fi world-building and stuff is now in the Moe shows?
Yeah, and the shows that we use, a lot of fans used to despise. This, if I may, because this is exactly what I was hoping for out of Buso Shinki, kind of. They kind of hinted at it with when they had the parts thief.
Yeah.
The guy used the two other Shinkis, and they thought they were doing the right thing.
Yeah.
By protecting their master, but in fact, they were completely wrong. Like, when they start touching on these, like, abandonment and mental, like, issues that Shinkis have, is when I'm the most interested in these shows. Because you can tell, like, the people who caused the initial liberation, they have some serious abandonment issues that have led to some genuine malice and hatred.
Yeah.
If this show gave up on that crappy sing-songy opening and just went a completely darker direction, I would be all over this. That's probably not going to happen, but I'm at the very least glad that they can do hint at this happening from time to time.
Well, I don't believe in Grimdark for Grimdark's sake.
Mm-hmm.
We already have 40K.
That's true.
Warhammer 40K.
That's true.
But I do appreciate them knowing the implications of a world with tiny AI robots. And explore. Like, here's the thing. Somebody's going to watch that and they're going to think about it. You know? It's the same as the 80s shows when they had just some random-ass science fiction trope in it. They just, people would think about it. You know, it's like, maybe this isn't quite the same sort of manly whatever that we had in the 80s, but it has all the...
A lot of those same elements are still present.
Yeah. So I guess I think that's what I tried to argue one time, that if we can't get rid of Moe, we have to temper it and make it work for us.
The thing is, as of recent years, I think we've done a good... or I think Japan has done a pretty good job of striking a good balance with it, honestly, though.
Yeah.
This, again, this season's a pretty good example of it.
Yeah. So we'll have to see how it shakes loose eventually if Busou Shinki gets a little more serious. I think they're going to maybe do more serious episodes.
Or, I would enjoy it if they did.
Yeah.
Because honestly, after that date with Master One, I need, like, this is exactly what I need to get my faith back in the show.
Well, they seem to be alternating between, like, a really good episode and a kind of mediocre one. So,
well, one last thing is, I love that this episode does not end with them getting the lunch to Master. It's just him saying, "I'm still hungry."
Yeah.
The end.
Yeah. Oh, well, I did... They have to do more with Kurara.
They really do.
They need to re-release these things so I can buy one.
It's infuriating. It really is.
Yeah. There were some cheap ones on Mandarake, but...
Yeah.
Some of the lesser ones. Not the early ones that the show is mostly about. Oh, well. Okay, I think that's going to do it for this episode of the Otaku DX Show with Veef and Deef. JoJo's is now on part two.
That was so fast.
To be fair, part one is only like four volumes anyway.
Yeah, it's not very long, but still.
Yeah, to be honest, like, them going through the whole fight with Dio and then the wedding and Jonathan's death. Spoilers. But it's like... This has all the beats I should be cheering for, but it went a little fast there.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe they just realized that the first part is sometimes the weakest.
It's pretty forgettable compared to, let's say, like three or two or something.
Yeah.
Or is it four people are really... It's... Which one's Steel Ball Run?
Seven is Steel Ball Run.
Okay, I was completely off.
That's when the world is reset.
Okay, okay.
The problem with four is that it had terrible scanlations that need to be cleaned up. That were done by, like, one guy in China or Hong Kong.
Oh, jeez.
And he was doing, like, tons of them a week. So, using the Chinese editions. Yeah, so, part two, at least it'll be longer. And it is kind of the secret best JoJo's. Joseph Joestar is such a jackass. But he's so lovable when he does it. All right, so anyway, we are ending this episode.
Yes.
Once again, you can follow us on Twitter. I am at VF5SS.
And I am at @Drago_Kun. And you can now follow our show at @VFandief, where we'll maybe post more. Who knows?
That's all you, man.
Alright, I'll see what I can do.
I'm happy with my social networks. You can... I have a Facebook group to maintain. The mighty robots.
Yeah. Robots.
Okay. Anyway, so we are signing off.